Today, the push-pull market dynamics. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and prop news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In our weekly market review, we survey trends in the US, then Europe, Asia and Australia, as well as covering developments in oil, gold and crypto. The main takeout is the continuing uncertainty pertaining to inflation and interest rates, as well as the conflict in Ukraine. The fallout is already significant, with global food prices reaching a new all-time high, according to a report from the UN. Cooking oils, cereals and meats hit all-time highs, and it means that food commodities cost a third more than the same time last year, according to the Food and Agricultural Organization's monthly food price index, published on Friday. The Russia-Ukraine war has disrupted Black Sea exports of crucial commodities from a region that had been producing more than a quarter of the world's wheat exports. The war has helped push cereal prices up 70% over the past month, with the closure of ports throttling wheat and maize exports from Ukraine. Russian exports have also been slowed by financial and shipping problems. World wheat prices soared by 19.7% during March, while maize prices posted a 19.1% month-on-month increase, hitting a record high, along with those of barley and sorghum. The FAO said that these problems were likely to persist, leading to higher prices, lower stocks, and uncertainty in the wheat market in the future. The higher price quotations are particularly concerning for countries already struggling with other crises, including conflict, natural disasters, economic conditions, or, as is often the case, some combination of those, an FAO spokesperson said, adding that countries with low incomes and food shortages may struggle to pay higher prices. Price increases are the most noticeable in the countries where the share in disposable income spent on food is the highest. In these cases, the most vulnerable are likely to skip meals, purchase less nutritious foods, or use other coping strategies which will have longer-term effects on their health and well-being. Projected stock levels were already low relative to recent years, which means that there are few supplies available to buffer the impact from reduced exports coming from the Black Sea. In fact, estimates are that Ukraine and Russia accounted for 12% of calories traded in the world. The volatility in food prices was being felt everywhere. Countries that were particularly reliant on wheat from Russia and Ukraine may have to switch to the EU, the US, Australia, Canada, and Argentina for wheat supplies. Many of those countries are in North Africa and the Middle East, where wheat often accounts for as much as 35% of total calories consumed, and the majority of the wheat is imported from the Black Sea. Black Sea region also has been a crucial source for sunflower oil, and the limiting of exports has meant vegetable oil prices rising by almost a quarter since February. Prices also rose for palm, soy and rapeseed oils because of increased demand. And earlier this week, the World Food Programme said the effect of blocked exports would hit several countries in East Africa, including Kenya, Ethiopia, Somalia and South Sudan, countries already experiencing severe drought and conflict. They said the price of local foods had risen a quarter on average compared with last year, but had been as high as 92% in Sudan, and also warned that Eastern African countries are fully dependent on imports for fertilizer, for which Ukraine and Russia are also a key source, and that disruption could impact local production and push food prices even further up. Now back to the financial markets, the Dow ended higher on Friday, but that wasn't enough to prevent a weekly loss as techs snapped its swinging streak under pressure from surging Treasury yields following further details of the Federal Reserve's plan to rein in inflation. Four S&P 500 industry sectors fell: information technology, consumer discretionary, communication services and industrials. The first quarter US reporting season begins next week, with banks first out of the starting gate. Banks are expected to show a sharp decline in earnings from a year earlier, when they benefited from exceptionally strong deal-making and trading, and funds set aside for loan assets were being released. In the US, the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 0.4%, the S&P 500 fell 0.2%, and the Nasdaq slipped 1.3%. All three major averages ended the week in the red. technology stocks snapped a 3-week winning streak, keeping the broader market in the red as investors remain wary of growth sectors of the market in the wake of surging Treasury yields. The 10-year Treasury yield jumped above 2.7% for the first time in more than 3 years on expectations for aggressive Fed Reserve tightening to stem inflation. Meanwhile, a slew of Fed policymakers chimed in on policy moving forward at separate events on Thursday. The Fed's March meeting minutes released earlier this week showed that Fed members appeared poised to hike by 50 basis points in May and initiated a sizable drawdown of the balance sheet beginning next month. St. Louis Fed President James Bullard said he prefers hiking the policy rate to 3% or 3.25% in the second half of 2022. But Chicago Fed President Charles Evans and his Atlanta counterpart Raphael Bostic said that they favour hiking rates to neutral while continuing to monitor the economy. Big technology, including Apple, Microsoft and Alphabet, fell more than 1%, while an ongoing decline in the chip stocks added pressure on the broader sector. Banking stocks, which have been under pressure in recent sessions on worries about a potential recession and how that could increase bad debts for banks, finally found some reprieve as investors looked ahead to quarterly results from the major Wall Street banks next week. JP Morgan reports results on Wednesday, while Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Wells Fargo and Morgan Stanley report on Thursday. Banks are in a good place to be in the upcoming economic environment, not just because rates are going up, but I think the consumer still is in the position to strengthen, Jimmy Lee, the founder and CEO of the Wealth Consulting Group, said on Friday. While rising rates boost lending margins and profitability for banks, the pace of the increase in rates has driven up borrowing costs and impacted demand. The red-hot pace of increasing rates will be determined by whether the Fed follows through on its hawkish plan to tighten monetary policy. Once again, I remind you that nothing much has changed so far. It's all words. So we'll see how that translates to actions. Most people believe that the Fed is going to be very hawkish and cause a recession. But I just don't think that they will, Lee added. If the economic data starts to look ugly, I think they'll stop tightening immediately. Energy stocks were up by more than 2%, buoyed by rising oil prices, as investors weighed up the prospect of energy supply disruptions after the EU confirmed new sanctions, including a coal embargo against Russia, over the latter's invasion of Ukraine. Despite the rise on Friday, oil prices succumbed to second weekly losses as countries agreed to release millions of barrels of emergency supplies. Coterra Energy, EOG Resources and Occidental Petroleum were among the biggest gainers, with the latter up more than 7%. In other news, Boeing fell 1.7% after a Boeing 757 jet broke in half during an emergency landing in Costa Rica. And United Airlines also confirmed it delayed the return of some grounded Boeing 777 planes until at least May the 12th. The volatility index was down 1.81% to 2116, and gold futures for June delivery was up 0.35% to 1,944. Gold moved higher against the greenback and finished the week up nearly 0.9%. The momentum seems to be pointing to higher prices, but the rally in the greenback continues to weigh on forward progress. Prices did slice above short-term resistance near the 10-day moving average at 1,929. Resistance, though, is seen near the March highs of 1,944. Elsewhere in commodities trading, crude oil for delivery in May rose 2.13% to hit $98.08 a barrel, while the June Brent oil contract rose 2.13% to $102.72 a barrel. Oil prices are looking at weekly losses of around 3%, weighed by the decision of a number of major consuming nations to release massive amounts of crude from emergency reserves, as well as China's worsening demand outlook as its COVID outbreak persists. International Energy Agency member countries announced earlier in the week that they would release 60 million barrels of oil, adding to the 180 million barrels released by the United States last week. While China's COVID-19 outbreak appears to be worsening, with new cases topping 21,000 reported on Thursday. The euro-US dollar was unchanged to 109, while the US dollar index was up 0.06% to 99.82. In the UK, Britain's top equity index closed at an 8-week high on Friday, lifted by commodity and banking stocks at the end of a volatile week that saw concerns about higher US interest rates and the Ukraine conflict rattle investors. The blue chip FTSE 100 gained 1.6% to touch its highest since February 11th, with oil majors BP, Shell, and minor Anglo-American rising between 3.7% and 4.8%. The makeup of the FTSE 100 is the biggest reason why the market is outperforming, said Martin Gurdick, head of European equities at NN Investment Partners. We have a very different landscape for commodities at this time, and the natural reaction from equity investors is if you want to hedge yourself against inflation, you want to buy into commodity exposures. The FTSE logs its fifth straight weekly gain and is up 3.7% so far this year due to its heavy weighting in energy and mining companies, which have benefited from a sharp rally in oil and metal prices. Still, defensive stocks such as pharmaceuticals and utilities boosted markets this week as well, as investors played safe amid concerns about the Russia-Ukraine conflict and the prospects of rapid policy tightening by global central banks to tame inflation. The European Union adopted its fifth package of sanctions against Russia, including bans on the import of coal, wood, chemicals and other products. Britain added Russian President Vladimir Putin's daughters to its sanctions list. The domestically focused mid-cap FTSE 250 index closed up 0.7% but still logged a weekly fall. AstraZeneca gained 2.5% to hit a record high after Credit Suisse raised its price target on the drug maker's stock. And Ukraine-focused miner Ferrexpo jumped 10.8% after it said it was able to sell most of the iron ore pellets produced in the first quarter. An online trading platform, CMC Markets, climbed 12.8% after its fourth quarter trading update, while paper and packaging group Mondi slipped 0.9% after Morgan Stanley downgraded the stock to equal weight. European stock markets traded higher on Friday, ending a volatile week on a positive note as investors continue to digest the prospect of tighter monetary policy, more sanctions on Russia, and potential French political turmoil. The DAX in Germany traded 1.46% higher, and the CAC 40 in France rose 1.34%. Despite these gains, European equity markets are set to end the week largely lower, with the DAX down around 1.2% and the CAC 40 down 1.9%, and the Blue Euro Stoxx 50 index 1.6% weaker. The prospect of aggressive global rate hikes has rattled investors this week, with the US Federal Reserve signalling it was preparing to act more quickly than previously guided to contain rampant inflation. And the policymakers at the European Central Bank was not so hawkish, but still appeared keen to unwind stimulus, according to the March meeting details released on Thursday. Elsewhere, the war in Ukraine continues with the United Nations General Assembly suspending Russia from the UN Human Rights Council over allegations of atrocities against the Ukrainian citizens, something denied by Moscow. The US Congress also removed its most favoured nation trade status, and the European Union agreed to ban those coal imports, the first time that sanctions have targeted Russia's crucial energy revenues. Also on the radar is the risk of a political upset in France, with far-right leader Marine Le Pen very close to incumbent Emmanuel Macron in the opinion polls ahead of Sunday's first round of the French presidential election. In corporate news, Volvo stocks fell 1% after the Swedish truck maker set aside provisions of 4 billion crowns or $423 million, expecting its first quarter operating income to take a hit from uncertainty caused by the Russian-Ukraine war. Banco BPM stock surged over 14% after French bank Crédit Agricole said that it had bought a 9.2% stake in Italy's third largest lender. Asia Pacific stocks were up on Friday, while investors continued to monitor both the US Federal Reserve's plan to tighten its monetary policy and the latest COVID-19 outbreak in China. Japan's Nikkei 225 ended up 0.36% as data released earlier in the day, while it showed that the current account was 1.648 trillion Japanese yen, which is about 13.31 billion US dollars in February, while the adjusted current account was 520 billion yen. South Korea's Kospi inched up 0.17%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng was up 0.29%. China's Shanghai Composite was up 0.47%. The prospect of sharp Fed rate hikes, alongside a reduction in its bond holdings and the ongoing war in Ukraine and China's COVID-19 outbreak, with the city of Shanghai topping 21,000 daily cases, are all dampening investor sentiment and risk appetite. Chinese tech stocks slid for the third day as Tencent Holdings' decision to shut its game streaming service further hurt sentiment in a sector already bogged down by regulatory risks. The Hang Seng Tech Index fell as much as 3% on Friday in early trading, with video streaming firm Bilibili among the worst performers. Midium was also a drag on the gauge, following news that Sequoia Capital reduced stakes. Tencent's decision comes more than a year after Beijing blocked a merger between its investees, an entity which the soon-to-be-closed platform Penguin Esports was expected to be folded into. China tech stocks have come off a record high in mid-March, but are yet to stage a sustainable rally amid regulatory risks. Shares of live streaming platforms led a decline in US-listed Chinese stocks on Thursday, with the Nasdaq Golden Dragon China Index down 4.5%. And it's worth noting that tech shares have been hit especially hard recently following Beijing's crackdown on the live streaming sector's tax evasion and a series of hawkish comments from the Federal Reserve. Chinese authorities have repeatedly vowed to add policy stimulus and stabilize markets, but that's done little to soothe investors worried of a spillover from higher US interest rates, among other risks. And on Friday, Chinese regulators said that they'll start a campaign until early December to curb violations in internet companies' algorithms. Here back in Australia, Australian shares advanced on Friday but posted a small loss for the week as investors grappled with the prospect of aggressive interest rate rises from central banks around the world. The ASX 200 dropped 0.2% to 7,478 this week, despite adding 0.5% on Friday. The Australian share market took a positive lead from Wall Street, where all three major benchmarks closed the session modestly higher. This translated to a 0.5% rise at the opening of the local market on Friday. GrainCorp hit a record high of $9.46 after the company issued its second profit upgrade in 2 months amid bumper growing conditions on the East Coast and strong global demand following Russia's war in Ukraine. Shares in the company rose 5.8% to $9.19. Uranium stocks rocketed after the price of the commodity surged to $61.60 a pound, the highest level since the Fukushima nuclear disaster in March 2011. Paladin Energy leapt 13.1% to 90.5 cents. Deep Yellow rose 5.6% to $1.14. And Boss Energy added 8.4% to $2.58. ProMedica signed a $32 million 8-year contract with US non-profit healthcare provider Inova Health Systems. The stock rose 1.6% to $47.97. And shares in Platinum Asset Management died to a record low after it released an announcement on Thursday saying its funds under management fell to $19.4 billion on March 31st from $21.1 billion at the end of February. The stock plunged 15% to $1.89. IGO tumbled 1.7% to $13.68 after UBS initiated coverage on a company with a sell rating and a $12.56 price target. While we remain bullish on the outlook for lithium and nickel and see potential for higher prices for longer and risk of upward revisions to long-term prices, current prices are unsustainable, said analyst Levi Spry. Allkem firmed 2.2% to $13.09, while Liontown Resources fell 1.1% to $1.73, and Pilbara Minerals dropped 0.9% to $3.20. The major miners rose despite the iron ore price dropping 3.2% to $155.05 a tonne overnight. BHP climbed 1.7% to $51.94. Rio Tinto added 0.2% to $118.98. And Fortescue firmed 0.4% to $21.83. The major banks ended the session mixed, with ANZ up 0.6% to $27.50. Commonwealth Bank up 0.1% to $105.38. While National Australia Bank finished flat at 32.47, and Westpac declines 0.04% to 24.10. And finally, in crypto land, Bitcoin is nowhere near where it was just 5 months ago. At that time in November 2021, the world's number one digital asset was trading at around $68,000 per unit. The currency has managed to get itself out of the doldrums and spike into the mid to high 40,000 ranges, a solid improvement over the 37,000 it was trading in for most of mid-March. Now Van Eyck, a company known for its history of submitting Bitcoin-based exchange-traded fund applications to the Securities Exchange Commission in the hopes of revolutionising Bitcoin trading, unsuccessfully so far, by the way, is claiming that if this momentum keeps up, Bitcoin could potentially reach a price of $1.3 million per coin. Eric Fine, the head of active emerging market debt for the company, said, "Our emerging markets bond investment team attempted to quantify the emergence of new gold or Bitcoin-backed currency regimes. The bottom line is that the upside for gold and Bitcoin is potentially dramatic. Specifically, the framework estimates gold prices at around $31,000 per ounce and potential Bitcoin prices of around $1.3 million per coin. Adjusting for greater strains on financial and monetary systems generates even higher prices." But then the firm also issued a warning to go with their predictions. "The prices generated in this extreme scenario, in which either gold or Bitcoin become the reserve asset, obviously needs to be adjusted downward. They are just a starting point. The upside in crypto seems much higher, say 33 times, than that in gold, say 16 times, although gold is the more straightforward initial response by central banks. However, individual actors may be faster to act." El Salvador was the first country to arguably add the world's number one digital currency to its financial roster. The nation then made the move of declaring the asset legal tender that could be utilized alongside US dollars, the fiat currency El Salvador had long been dependent on. It is believed that several other nations will follow suit and make similar moves surrounding Bitcoin, but we will see. Such a prediction came from Fidelity Investments not too long ago, which stated, "There is a very high-stakes game theory in play here, whereby if Bitcoin adoption increases, the countries that secure some Bitcoin today will be better off, competitively speaking, than their peers." In addition, it's long been stated that countries such as Russia, which are currently being sanctioned by the United States and many of its allies, will try to use cryptocurrency to avoid such sanctions and keep their economies stable and financially accessible. Except, of course, as I discussed earlier in the week, Russia has aligned the ruble to gold at the moment. Now, of course, all these extended estimations of the value of Bitcoin or indeed gold are really fantasy land at the moment, so far from the current position that really you can't take it seriously. But then many of these commentators have an axe to grind, so don't take it too seriously at all. I still think the right tenor here is continued uncertainty, continued caution. And with the inflation genie now firmly out of the bottle and central banks absolutely having to raise rates to try and control it, by the way, they may not be that successful, as well as the Ukraine-Russia situation, all bets are off in terms of where markets may go from here, except I still think downside risk is probably more to the fore than new heights, but we'll see. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.